Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations with the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 113 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Falling Numbers Friction, Upcountry Lessons from Highline Grain's Paul Katovich. Katovich is the CEO of Highline Grain Company, a Waterville, Washington-based cooperative that was formed with the consolidation of five smaller entities. Katovich spoke at the second Falling Numbers Summit in Portland in late January 2019. He was, in fact, just one of a dozen speakers, most of them researchers, explaining what new information they were bringing to the dance since the first summit a year ago. I think a lot of progress has been made, but I've got to be honest, there is no solution in sight. We do have more knowledge, and knowledge is always important, but I'm not smart enough to convey everything that's happening, at least not accurately, and I wasn't alone. One executive of a Northwest grain organization told me at the end of the event, "There were times I was more lost than I have been hunting elk." Of course, part of my job is to make complicated information understandable, and I'll be trying to do that in the second of three parts I plan to produce from the conference. This is the first time I've produced a three-parter, but of the challenges facing farmers, Falling Numbers is right up there with trade for having the potential to cost them millions of dollars. In 2016, in fact, it was estimated that farmers lost anywhere from $30 million to $200 million as a result of that year's weather-induced Falling Numbers failure. That's worth three episodes, isn't it? The Washington Grain Commission has funded more than $500,000 worth of research on Falling Numbers since 2011 and was crucial in creating a new $1 million position at the Agricultural Research Service in Pullman. That person, who is expected to be hired before the summer, will research quality and falling numbers concerns throughout the Northwest. For those new to this podcast or the Falling Numbers Challenge, I have done several podcasts pertaining to the topic over the last couple of years. You can find all Wheat All About It episodes at the Washington Grain Commission website at wagrains.org. Go to the bottom of the page, click on Summaries, and navigate back into time. The term Falling Numbers goes back to the Falling Numbers machine, which measures the integrity of wheat samples. A score above 300 is acceptable. All wheat below 300 is subject to discounts. The number is a reference to how much time, in seconds, it takes for a plunger to fall through a test tube-sized slurry of ground wheat and water. The faster the plunger falls to the bottom, the lower the score. Until 10 years or so ago, farmers thought the only way to get low-falling numbers was as a result of pre-harvest sprout, shortened to PHS, which is caused by rain falling on ripe crops, a signal for the embryo to start growing. Although the phenomenon may have been occurring longer, in 2011, it became clear that PHS wasn't the only mechanism that caused low-falling numbers. Late-maturity alpha-amylase, abbreviated LMA, is activated by low temperatures during wheat flowering. Although its alpha-amylase is not deposited in the same place as PHS, the Falling Numbers machine measures them both as the same. As you'll hear ahead, a wheat that comes in below 270 seconds is considered by the grain industry to be too difficult to blend up to 300. Unlike protein, which can be blended on a one-to-one basis, blending for falling numbers is done on a logarithmic scale, a word I still don't understand after looking it up online and reading the definition. People like Paul Katovich, who is CEO of Highline Grain Company, understands logarithmic equations and a lot of other things that I don't. A son of a doctor who grew up in St. Mary's, Idaho, he graduated from the University of Idaho with a degree in economics. He is among a cadre of young Turks who now lead Eastern Washington's elevator industry. Their numbers are far fewer than a few decades ago, but their economic exposure when it comes to things like falling number discounts is much larger. There are exciting things happening in the world of falling number science, and as I said, I'll be getting to that in next week's podcast. This week, I'm introducing the missing ingredient from last year's first Falling Numbers Summit. That is, a connection with and a perspective of farmers. Katovich began by telling his audience of scientists, industry executives, and observers about the historical roots of Eastern Washington's cooperative elevator industry, members' expectations, and how the falling number challenge is creating friction in the countryside.
I'm a general manager of a co-op. We're a little company. There's more people that work at Safeway than work for Highline Grain Growers. It's a relationship that is multi-generational, and the job that I do is basically I'm a steward of this platform. The platform was created by farmers to do things, provide products and services that they couldn't do on their own, that they needed to do collectively. All the people that created these companies are now gone, but their expectation was that this platform lived forever. That's the goal, is to make sure that we are the connection to the global marketplace for all these individual farm families that are stuck with their dirt, their lot in life. And one of the problems that we have now is a true degradation in that relationship with falling number. So I'll go back to kind of the beginning. From 2002 to today, I've lived through 9 trips down the falling number path. It was 2016 when people understood what falling numbers were. 2007, when I was trying to figure out what the problem was, we didn't have a falling number machine in Spokane. So you had to mail it around in circles trying to get an answer. Well, that was pretty difficult to ship a crop when you couldn't tell what your problem was. So time goes on and more people understand what the problem is. But what I think we're seeing is a change in genetics that create a problem that we didn't have before. So stepping back further, I had spreadsheets that were tracking origins. Now, I didn't know what I didn't know, but what I could tell you was I could predict what a train in Wenatchee would look like, or a barge out of Pomeroy would look like, or a train out of Ritzville. I was tracking all that, including falling number. It wasn't a problem then. Now, that was in the late 90s. You'd have to get into sprout damage above 2%, and then we'd start having a falling number problem. So I see some people shaking their heads, yet they agree. So all I'm giving you is empirical data from a guy who's trying to either load a boat or ship something to load a boat. That's it. So obviously the dumbest guy in the room when it comes to how this actually works. The first variety that we saw without rain was Blanca Grande. It was a hard white spring wheat, and everybody was excited about this variety, including end users. They thought this made a good product, and it was a competitive factor in how can buyers find something that competes with the Australian APH, which is another kind of a hard white type wheat. It had a falling number problem, and we didn't know why. So basically, we killed it. My guess is that it has some kind of genetic strain. If we can use the filter for all the ones that have problems, can we find whatever genetic strain is common to all of them and point this out? I'm sure there's somebody in here that knows a lot better on how to get there. A question was just asked about the level, I think, and Andrew was describing. I'm going to steal that too. Just that concept of what the mill is trying to mill for. They're milling for their weakest customer, the one that can't handle the problem. And that's true. We were just talking about that at lunch. That the same thing happens in the U.S. It's a quality issue that they have to draw a line and say everybody can use this. That's why the line's 300. Most everybody overseas that we ship to are sophisticated enough to handle 250, and the farmer, enough of them know that just makes them mad. It further degrades this relationship that we have, the industry, the cooperative that's trying to provide the market access and the exporter. It's degrading that relationship almost at every level. Well, what is a good solution? We're not coming up with one other than trying to continue to communicate the problem. that doesn't help. It doesn't help their relationship with us. And so, you know, what they really love to hate is me. Because somebody like me or somebody like me, is going to make a decision on whether or not they're going to get discounted, ultimately. Because our industry as a whole, we'll take this back to 2016, we figured out a path to loading all those vessels. We made it. That was the worst year that I've ever seen, but we made it, and we're able to load those vessels. We certainly don't want to degrade the relationship between, you know, ultimately our farmers and the end user overseas by saying we don't have the quality to meet your needs. And we learned that lesson in 2016 to make sure that we're not, you know, sounding the alarm before we really know what we have. Above all else, I think this is a team sport in making sure that those boats get loaded. Another question, I think, and I can't remember who asked it, but it was related to the exporter. You know, what do they care? They don't necessarily care so long as they have the ability to pass their problem on. So they're stuck in the middle. They're price takers most of the time, and they're also, you know, trying to take a product that they don't control necessarily and ship it to somebody who's going to grade it again, and then potentially have a problem on the backside of that shipment. So what do? That line, 300 falling number, allows them to pass the buck, you know, back into the country. We talk about discounts, and we talk about, you know, how much that costs the individual farmer. And so just as a recap for those of you who don't know, the standard discount is 25 cents each 25 points under 300. So at 299, that's a 25-cent discount. At 274, it's a 50-cent discount, and so on. There's a philosophy behind why you set a discount schedule, and I'll shorten it up here, but as an exporter, you're also trying to make money, and you're blending good stuff with bad stuff. The larger the step, so I think of it in terms of like a, you know, staircase. So at $2.99, you take a 25-cent step down, and then it goes to 275, and at 274, you take another 25-cent step down. So these big, long, jagged steps are easy to make money when you're blending. That's a buyer's type discount schedule. The opposite is a seller's discount schedule, and that is as flat and as small an increment as possible. So some of us, and the one that Highline Grain Growers uses today, is a half a penny a point. So you guys in the room know that there's actually a liquefaction calculation that helps us blend that. I try to describe that to growers. They don't really care. They're still just mad that they're getting a discount in the first place. The liquefaction is not linear. It's logarithmic, and you guys know that. I have big charts, and I realized that made no sense when I was doing this, you know, with a spreadsheet in front of a group of guys that were angry at me. But what we try to do as sellers is make the increment as small and as pain-free as possible. So that incremental change is important. We also move the line down a little bit below 300 because of the variability. So I think I'll stop there for now, and I'll point out what we see in reality.
At this point, Katovich drifted away from the microphone to point to a PowerPoint slide that compared falling number scores immediately following harvest and after a short storage. Falling number scores sometimes go up, and that's what farmers remember, but they go down too.
In the industry, in the country, there is a common belief that it always gets better. Just wait, it'll always get better. It's kind of psychology that people have a confirmation bias, and you guys have probably felt that at one time or another. It doesn't always get better, but we do see some correlation to shipments getting better. So in soft white wheat, we had a couple of thousand. The average change was actually 3.65 seconds lower. But look at the range. So negative 135 to 123 over. That's pretty tough. And that's the one that the farmer remembers is his neighbor. Everything he tested went up. And it went up by like 75 to 100 points or 25 to 100 points. There are examples like that. The other neighbor on the other side had the same thing going the other way. He just conveniently forgets that. The psychology behind that is not something I stand in front of a bunch of farmers and try to beat into them. They still think it's going up, and who's the bad guy? It's us. This is a problem because we have a multi-generational relationship that we're just trying to do the best we can to be stewards of this platform for them. The club is club wheat's a, you guys all know that probably, but it's a subclass of soft white wheat, and the average change was barely any 0.79, so it wasn't even one. But again, the range is huge. So I could probably go on and look at the breakdowns in different sections, but we have a north, south, an east, and a west in our regions. We just broke it down that way, and we test what we find is that you pointed that out in a topographical map, that the more topography you have, the more likely you are to have a problem. And I can kind of back that up with just empirical evidence that we're not that far away from another company that's very similar to ours. It's called Sun Basin Growers, and they're a cooperative as well. And they're to the south of us that runs through the basin. The basin is generally pretty flat. It's all that irrigated ground that you drive through, before you get to Moses Lake. And that's generally sloping right to Pasco. And there's a whole, history on why that's so neat and how they can irrigate, flood irrigate that country. They don't have a problem. 2016, they didn't have a problem. They had two growers with a problem. In 2018, they didn't have a problem. Is it just because of topography, or are there other things involved? I think it's environmental in part. For us up north, we tend to get colder temperatures later in the year, so we'll get a freeze in June, and so we end up seeing this problem more than others. This is how we're trying to break it down. So if we'll just take the upper left-hand corner, sub 200 is really a non-event this year. In 2016, and if I had, if I showed you 2016, which is actually out of that same email, that problem was dramatic. We had lots of samples that were below 200. So that's what we're trying to fight. And I did see a note from somebody that said, well, if we get that kind of wheat, maybe we don't have enough wheat in the whole industry to blend it off. That's not really the case. We seem to be able to get through it. But the stuff that, for us, the way we think about it, anything below 270 becomes toxic. You really don't want to touch everything else with it. We test and retest all the stuff that goes below 300. It just dawned on us this year that we very seldom test anything that was originally above 300. So I don't really know what happens if the good stuff gets better. And somebody probably knows, Andrew probably knows already, does the good stuff get better and the bad stuff get worse? I don't know. But what we do see is over time, as we continue to move it, we see more consistency, and we seem to be able to use our liquefaction blend calculator, and we're able to load trains. So that's ultimately the goal. You can see, I'm using Connell. That's a Sun Basin comment I just made. Here's the other problem. Connell had no reason to discount because they really didn't have a big enough problem to worry about it. So now that, they're the good guys, and because we had, a problem 50% of the time, we're the bad guys. There's an issue with how we maintain a relationship with a multi-generational farm family. Maybe I'll stop there because I have more questions than answers. But I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me, because that's the other takeaway I had. It was a whole bunch of people in the room maybe didn't have the perspective from the industry on how to focus to solve our problem. And it's just one side of that, of that problem overall. I don't think we know enough to all we're trying to do is diagnose a problem with a system that was meant for a lab for flour in a lab in the 60s. None of that gives any farmer any confidence that he should be discounted. But here we sit. And ultimately, who's at the end of the chain? Well, the farmer is at the end of the chain. So the only defense that they have is a company like ours, which does everything in our power to make the problem go away the best we can. So we manipulate the discount, and you guys can picture, the discount schedules that we have, half a penny a point below 290 versus 25 each 25. Well, it doesn't take you very many mistakes to go broke. So, we're doing a calculated risk, and really all we're doing is absorbing as much of that risk for the farmer as we can.
At this point, someone asked Katovich about the liquefaction or blending calculation that allows elevators to mix some low-falling number wheat lots with higher-falling number lots to create 300-plus falling number cargoes.
How many people know what that liquefaction blend? It's actually on the Internet. Imagine that. It's on the Internet. I had it when I was working in Portland. So I just brought it with me. And then in 2007, I was using it in a – it was 2009 in a Pacific Northwest Grain and Feed meeting. So the room had about the same number of hungover people looking at spreadsheets. And I was showing that they had no desire to listen because none of them knew what falling numbers were or that they had a problem. And they didn't. It was just me. And so I was just standing there complaining like I am now. But that liquefaction number, what it allows us to do is it's the logarithmic blend. So I have it on that computer, actually. I could take it. 350 and 250 does not make 300. It makes like 274 or something. Is that about right? Yeah, so but that thing drops off. So what I did is I just took a chart. It's a logarithmic line, so it's exponential. And I had to flip it. Because it was going up, and what I really wanted to show was how bad 100 was. 100 falling number is toxic. You know that one load ruins all the stuff around it, and for thousands of bushels, you dump 10,000 bushels of that stuff on top of a million bushel pile, and now it's blended through it. What do we do? And that was my point. That's what I was trying to make. I emailed it to everybody I know. Everybody's got the spreadsheet that if they know me and they're in the grain business, they got it. They may use it, they may not.
Another questioner asked Katovich to expound on his comment that the LMA phenomenon appears to be at least partly varietal based.
We were segregating by variety. We were trying to figure out how do we save this crop? How do we save part of the crop? Part of the crop's garbage. We got to do something else with it. Part of it is needs to go to Japan. We started to segregate by variety. We used L-Tan and Otto as our segregator. So in our country, those are big varieties. Where where Joe lives, they don't plant those same varieties. But it worked in 2016. So we had some other varieties. I can name them, but the 2018 event, we had problems with those same varieties that we thought were bulletproof. That's to my point before. Our lifetime is not long enough to keep getting iterations to make us smarter. What I do think is there's got to be some genetic function. We're struggling as an industry to give good information, good feedback to our to our growers, and then still provide the function that we provide, which is to make sure that we're shipping something usable to the export side. Most of the time, we can figure it out. It takes time and money. And what we're trying to do is minimize the damage in the relationships that we have. I can stand here all day and talk about what it is that we do because we got nothing to hide. That's little solace for a guy who just got a 50-cent discount. He's just mad, and it's our job, I think, to try to figure that out. So, my opinion is that the reason we weren't seeing that before was at least in part varietal.
Referring to Katovich's comments about discounts, a questioner wanted to know exactly how much money was involved.
If you get a 50-cent discount, yeah, that's right. And each company is doing something different about it for different reasons, and I wouldn't point a finger at any one of them. I know them all. None of this is malicious. They just have different parameters in which they make the decision on how they, you know, how they interact with their individual patrons. But yeah, it's, well, added up, it's millions of dollars. You know, the end result is the boats get loaded. That too stings. The boats get loaded. How come you took it from me? The facilities aren't free. You know, those things are, you know, $250 million, and so that's one of the ways that they pay for it, is through a discount schedule. So that's not a friendly thing to say, but that's reality, and they do make the problem go away. And to a degree, you know, we're a buffer in between that.
If you're anything like me, then listening to these podcasts is a learning experience. I hadn't heard Katovich speak before, and he does it well. I wonder how the old guard, the elevator managers of my youth, would have responded to the falling numbers challenge. Certainly, the consolidation of the elevator industry has helped individual companies make the problem disappear. With bigger draw areas, there's always likely to be good wheat somewhere. I plan a podcast next week that enumerates some of the science researchers are pursuing to solve the falling number challenge. One approach is using facial recognition technology along with sophisticated filters to determine from the outside what's happening on the inside of the kernel. Thanks for listening to episode 113, Falling Numbers Friction, Upcountry Lessons from Highline Grain's Paul Katovich. I hope you'll join me again next week to find out more about the science that is being conducted with the goal of bringing clarity to the murky world of low falling numbers wheat. Only here on Wheat All About It!
We love the land, the farm's our career, but make no mistake, we do not steer. Mother Nature's in the driver's seat. I'm talking life and I'm talking wheat. We're riding shotgun, we have our say, but Mama Green, she shows the way. We feed you,